Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition, Saturday, February 20th, 2021. Record cold run ends. Sun warms Midland after 221 hours of freezing temperatures. 46 degrees. That was the high temperature Friday, ending the coldest period in Midland's recorded history, according to the National Weather Service. The NWS reported Friday that the temperature hit 33 degrees for the first time since February 10th. In that nine-day span, 13 new records were set for either coldest high or low temperatures. The NWS also shows new records for consecutive days when the temperature failed to top 32 degrees. The previous record was 5. In fact, those 8 days from February 11th to the 18th alone ranked tied for second for the most 32-degree days or colder in an entire year. Lastly, the NWS reports that the 221 straight hours of freezing temperature is the longest stretch at or below 32 degrees on record, 90 years. And while 46 degrees is still 17 degrees cooler than the normal high temperature for February 19th, it was more than 23 degrees warmer than the average high from February 11th to the 18th. The NWS is calling for high temperature of 51 degrees and a low of 34 on Saturday, meaning Saturday could be the first day since February 8th that high and low temperatures stayed above freezing. Peyton. Discussion needed about Basin's role in reliability of Texas grid. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton said Thursday that conversations are needed at the state and federal level about the reliability of the Texas grid system and what role the Permian Basin can play in ensuring Texas's energy needs are met. Millions of Texans and tens of thousands of Midlanders were left without power and heat for more than 1 week in below-freezing temperatures after utility companies were unable to rotate outages during controlled blackouts. Once we get past all the finger-pointing and whose fault this is, whether it's ERCOT, Oncor, whoever it is, there's going to have to be a much longer discussion and a deeper discussion about the reliability of our electric grid and really the value that West Texas plays in that and how we should be a vital part of the conversation, Peyton said during a press conference. The mayor said he was in touch with U.S. Representative August Pfluger and State Representative Tom Craddock throughout last week about what resources were needed in Midland to help residents through the electricity crisis and winter storms. Peyton said he and Pfluger have also discussed guaranteeing how this happened and what happened is not forgotten at the state level in Austin and at the federal level, and we're doing everything we can to show the value of West Texas and the Permian Basin so that these kinds of things don't have to happen. What I'm hoping will happen is this will not become just distant memory, and it will be used for us to do the things we need to do for the reliability of the Texas grid. In a statement to the Reporter Telegram this week, Pfluger said he believes Texas' energy grid should remain under state control. He said he's spoken with local officials from the 29 counties he represents and submitted a list of high-priority issues. The state of Texas controls our grid for a reason, he said. The last thing that any of us want is for the federal government to control our state's electric grid. We absolutely cannot allow knee-jerk reactions to this once-in-a-generation catastrophe to result in government overreach. I want to make sure I am doing everything I can to advocate on behalf of the 11th District. Utility companies ended controlled blackouts on Thursday as warmer temperatures led to more energy production. Any remaining outages were related to winter storm damage, according to a statement from Oncor. There were 510 customers without power in Midland County on Friday. Frigid weather heats up commodity prices, by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Frigid temperatures across much of the country and resulting reductions in oil and gas output heated up commodity prices in a holiday-shortened week. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange reached highs not seen since this time last year, crossing $60 when trading opened Tuesday. Prices reached as high as $61.14 per barrel before weakening Thursday and Friday. Prices fell below the $60 level when the posted price ended the week at $55.72 per barrel. Natural gas prices soared almost 22 cents Tuesday to close at $3.13 per MCF. Amid temperatures and added another 9 cents Wednesday before falling 14 cents Thursday. Natural gas closed at $3.07 Friday. Susie Boyd, founder and president of Caballo Loco Midstream, told the Reporter-Telegram that prices at the Waha Hub in Reeves County was $153 for February 13 through 16 and $208 February 17th, before falling to $64 on Thursday, all from a first-of-the-month price of $2.40. On weekends, traders do their gas sales for 3 days of Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Since last Monday included the President's Day holiday, sales were done for 4 days, and one posting applied for the 4 days. With weather looming, these deals were done at prices beyond any comprehension and not seen in modern memory. According to Boyd, the 4 day index postings included Waha, where most Permian gas is priced at $153.61, when only a week before producers were ecstatic for a Waha posting of $3.15. Houston Ship Channel posted at $180.66. In other parts of the country, prices ranged from $13.60 in East Texas to $368 in the Mid-Continent and Oklahoma. Only 1OK Oklahoma posted an astronomical price of $944 on Wednesday, only to rise to $11.93 for Thursday. Still, because wells gathered lines and gas plants froze, she said only a lucky few producers were able to capitalize on those prices, with outages preventing any of them from fulfilling their sales obligations. Fortunately or unfortunately, the standardized contract that the industry uses for gas in the North American Energy Standards Board base contract for sale and purchase of natural gas, commonly called the NASB, has clear force majeure language that specifically refers to freezing and acts of God. This clause should prevent buyers from claiming damages when producers could not deliver the gas. Boyd predicted midstream companies are already declaring force majeure in order to refuse paying those high prices. There will be those who are collaborative and willing to work toward a solution, and there will be others insisting on collecting those high prices. It will be a mess for the next few weeks. Rystad, the Norwegian analytics firm, said Permian oil production will average less than 4.3 million barrels a day this month because of the weather. A small portion of the shut-ins may take time to come back, and some may never come back. But there are small volumes from wells that produce a few barrels per day, and the cost to make the necessary repairs may not be economical. Currently, we expect 100,000 to 200,000 barrels a day could remain offline over the coming weeks as operators work on addressing more complex issues and bringing these volumes back online. Fawcett predicted oil fields will be swarming with roustabout crews for hot oil truck and workover rigs working overtime, repairing pumps, compressors, gathering lines, SWDs, or well failures. Due to the magnitude of the impact, particularly in the Permian, some of these more complex issues could take longer to address, and thus lower producing wells will slowly be brought back online in the coming weeks as operators work through this backlog of downed production. Jim Burkhard, Vice President and Head of Research for Oil Markets, Energy, and Mobility, told the Reporter-Telegram, early indications are conditions are improving and production is returning to the marketplace. What the loss of U.S. production has emphasized is that Saudi Arabia is in control of oil markets. Power in the oil markets ebbs and flows. For the last decade, U.S. production has climbed, and that growth has driven the markets. Now, U.S. production is down, and global demand is on the increase. Burkhard noted that Saudi Arabia controls most of the world's spare production capacity, about 4.5 million barrels a day, while his firm expects global demand to rise 5 million barrels a day over the next 5 months. Producing nations like the U.S., Russia, Canada, and even Kazakhstan are not able to meet the need. If demand meets that prediction, he said oil prices could climb if the Saudis don't increase their output, though he thinks the Saudis will open their taps to keep prices near current levels. How high will oil prices go, he asked. The answer lies in Riyadh. Ramsey's former district knows what Midland is getting. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstMP.com. Monday is the first day that Angelica Ramsey will be the superintendent of schools for Midland Independent School District. It was a day that Becky Kramer feared would happen. Kramer is the president of the Board of Trustees for the Pleasant Valley School District in Camarillo, California. She told the Reporter-Telegram that she was not surprised that another school district would recruit Pleasant Valley's now former leader. Too many good things were happening in the district, located around 58 miles west-northwest of Los Angeles. Her background indicated a pretty good trajectory, Kramer told the Reporter-Telegram. We could not keep her for the rest of her career as a K-8 school district. Kramer said Midland is getting an education leader that is data-driven and believes classroom size is the indicator of student success. She said that one of Ramsey's legacies in Camarillo is as a person that could align community support behind the entire district, not just one high-performing school. Ramsey was a person that could communicate with unions, parent groups, Rotary members, and chamber officials. As a board member, she makes your job easier because the community already knows what is happening. Scott Wright, president of the Pleasant Valley Educators Association, told Midland ISD leaders he was instantly struck by how genuinely she cared about improving our district. In a letter shared by board member Rick Davis, Wright wrote, she had inherited a difficult situation. Teacher morale was at an all-time low, and there were staffing problems at the district office. She committed herself to improving both issues, and she did so quickly and efficiently. She understands how vital each employee is in ensuring the education of students, and she was able to motivate all of us to work collaboratively for their benefit. Dr. Ramsey has integrity and a clean demeanor, which inspires trust in employees, students, and parents. The praise she has garnered in our district is unprecedented. Whether it is revisiting old practices, tweaking current policies, or exploring new ideas, her enthusiasm and willingness to look at situations honestly prove to be formulas for success. She is solution-oriented and is quick to identify the issue or the problem and solve it. Kramer also stated that Midland ISD got a person capable of academic performance improvements. The website schooldigger.com showed Pleasant Valley School District ranked 321st of 1,525 districts in California. That is in the top quarter of school districts in the state. In fact, Kramer told the Reporter-Telegram that she was disappointed that tests were canceled this year. We were going to see gains, she said. Kramer also said Ramsey leaves behind a district that was on the rise academically and shows decreases in poor student outcomes. She makes decisions based on data and not political whims and feelings. Anyone who thought Ramsey will be able to ease into the position hasn't looked at the agenda for Monday night's board meeting. Among the items will be the decision about next year's school calendar, which has garnered considerable discussion on social media. Ramsey seems to be taking it in stride. Regardless of calendar selected, it will be important for us to come together to plan for targeted academic interventions for students across the system. Ramsey has experience with intersessional calendar operations from her time at the Socorro Independent School District in the El Paso area. Real and sustained change happens at the systems level, she added. Ramsey told the Reporter-Telegram she has completed an entry plan that will act as a roadmap for her transition into the district. She expects to submit it for board approval and then make it public. MISD's new leader deserves a clean slate, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstMP.com. Angelica Ramsey is ready to tackle Midland's quality instruction and academic performance issues. Are the rest of us? Seriously, is the Midland community, including its newspaper, ready to move the distractions to the side? What are they? Where do we start? There's always something. Some are beyond our control, like the weather, price of oil, and, of course, COVID. And sometimes that spotlight is moved because of us. Topics that come to mind include school name changes, school leadership changes, culture fights, governments, district purchases of golf courses, and apartments and calendars. If you didn't know any better, you'd think some of us aim to keep the discussion away from quality instruction and academic performance issues. And yes, I can point the finger at myself. I will take ownership for my part of the conversation. Will you? Will you let the new Midland ISD leadership, specifically Ramsey, make decisions and set a course before throwing the stones of past school district sins or enabling poor leadership choices by adding more to her plate? At what point will Ramsey be allowed to fight her own fights and not those of past leadership? Can we be patient enough to hold off on board discussions until we see the academic gains that some, including me, believe she's capable of? Again, creating an educational experience that is right for Midland right now has to start with quality instruction and academic performance issues. We continue to allow so many issues to seize the spotlight and become the narrative that we lose sight of what is important. Are our kids safe, and are they getting a good education, starting all the way down at pre-K and continuing through graduation? Those few things should be the narrative we should be talking about, quality education and universal quality pre-K. That's it. I agree. When Ramsey talked to the Reporter-Telegram in January, she said everything that happens on the campus is about providing the best instruction, period. She said then, what does that look like? How do you provide the system of support for your teachers to collaborate with one another? How do you remove barriers for them so that they can concentrate on teaching and learning? How do you come together as a group and you're all working with a laser-like focus on improving student outcomes? Improving student outcomes. She gets it. Do you? Do you want to? Let's be clear here. No organization, entity, or person has it all figured out when it comes to academic reform in Midland. I know I don't. If that was the case, this district wouldn't be in the position we're in today. Let's also be really clear, effective change will not go over well with 100% of those currently involved in education in Midland. It doesn't matter if Rod Schroeder, Ann Dixon, or Ramsey is at the helm. Today's article does not mean there weren't fights worth having. There were. Discussions do matter, and all viewpoints should be heard. The Reporter-Telegram, more than any other media, has been a home for anyone to have a say. That will continue to be the case. But the challenge I have set for myself is to steer the discussion back to quality instruction and academic performance. I think my friends representing numerous educational and community entities across Midland can agree that simpler is better. As a community, we need to greatly simplify our discussions of public education, my friend told me. It is a worthy goal. I hope people in our community also will agree that Ramsey deserves a clean slate. If she can keep the district focused on quality education and academic performance issues, I'm game. Are you? West Texas Food Bank distributed 471,000 pounds of food before the storm. By J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis@hurstmp.com. The West Texas Food Bank prepared for the extreme winter weather by distributing more than 471,000 pounds of food in the last 2 weeks, according to a press release. The food bank had to temporarily stop distributions because of power outages and road conditions last week, but on Friday it resumed drive-through pantries and deliveries to partner organizations. No food was lost because a giant generator kept the freezer and cooler running, as well as the heaters in the warehouse. The WTFB's partners, Breaking Bread and the Salvation Army in Odessa, continued to serve their communities throughout the storm. Alejandro Barrientos, chief and owner of Curbside Bistro, and Judge Sarah Kate Billingsley cooked thousands of meals for members of the Odessa community as well. Several mobile distributions have been rescheduled due to the storm. The new food distribution schedule is as follows. Monday, food distribution at 10 a.m. at McCamey County Annex Building in McCamey and at St. Lawrence Church in St. Lawrence. Tuesday, 10 a.m. at 87th Apartments in Odessa and at 5 p.m. at Woodson Park in Odessa. Wednesday, 10 a.m. at noon at Rooney Park in Fort Stockton. February 26th, 7 to 11 at Presidio Baseball Fields in Presidio.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, February 20, 2021. Viewpoints. Our view. Why did we lose power? It's not what you think. Midland Reporter Telegram. We lost power this week in Texas. Wind turbines froze, so it must be the fault of renewable energy and the Green New Deal. Gas and coal plants went offline, so the fossil fuel industry let us down. ERCOT, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, provided no reliability at our moment of highest need, so boot them out. It all makes for great theater while creating enough smoke to blur the real issue. Two things drove the power outage this week. The more important of the two is that Texans have decided that we want the lowest possible electric cost while delivering 99.9% reliability. Our reliability was better than that at one time, so that gave us room to inch back toward 99.9% to allow us to better manage costs. There is nothing necessarily wrong with this approach. We just need to be more open in our discussions that this is the major issue that took our electric system down this week. Reliability of 99.9% means each of us would average being without power for about a day and a half every 4 years. That really means a person might be without power for 3 days, and you might be without power for no days, so together we would average about a day and a half without power every 4 years. The major issue in play here is really this simple. Do we want to add a number to the right of the decimal, that is, try for 99.95% reliability, or are we happy with what we have? Here's the tricky part. How much would our electric bills have to go up in order to improve reliability? No one knows for sure, but estimates will begin to trickle out soon. To improve reliability, we need more spare power generation capacity in both the winter and the summer. We need to revamp our electric transmission system to remove bottlenecks and improve resilience. We need to better winterize some of our key power generation facilities, both fossil fuel and renewable, and we need to winterize the fuel source for our non-renewable generation facilities. Let's say a person pays just less than 10 cents per kilowatt hour all in to have electricity delivered to my house. Call it $100 per month. How much would it cost to move our reliability one more digit to the right? No idea. For argument's sake, let's say it is 2.5 cents a kilowatt hour. So the real question is, are we willing to pay $25 per month, each and every month, to deal with highly unusual winter or summer weather events? Maybe. What just happened is not a question of renewable versus fossil fuel energy. It is a question of cost of electricity versus reliability of the electric grid. Let's bypass the finger pointing and figure out how much it would cost to improve our reliability, then have a real discussion if those costs are worth the benefits. Let's start this important discussion. Then we can talk about the second issue, the issue of Texas being a sovereign nation when it comes to electric power generation. Editor's note, what do you think? How do we get to where we want to be when it comes to the delivery of electricity across the state?
Obituaries and death notices. Arnolfo L. De La O., 45 of Midland, passed away February 17th. A viewing will be held Monday, February 22nd from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Viewing will be held Tuesday, February 23rd at 10 a.m., followed by funeral services at 2 at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Bobby Joe Bonner, 93, longtime resident of Midland, passed away February 12th. Private family graveside service will be held next week. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin West Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Fred Charles Sonny Carter III, 64, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, February 13th. A memorial viewing will be held Sunday, February 21st, from 1 to 9 p.m. The family will have visitation on this day from 6 to 8 p.m. Celebration of Life services will be held Monday at 11 a.m. at the Mount Calvary Mission Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Jimmy Noble Haley, aged 86, passed away on February 16th. A viewing will be held February 22nd from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. A friend and family viewing will be held Tuesday, February 23rd from 6 to 8 p.m. Viewing to be held at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held on Wednesday, February 24th at 1:30 p.m. at Valley View Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Cemetery. Caleb Brianne Wagoner Everett passed away on February the 16th in Midland. Kayla's celebration of life will be held on Saturday, February 20th at 1:30 p.m. at Renew Life Church in Midland. Graveside service and burial will be in Worthen, Georgia. Maxine Darcy Nelson passed away on February 14th. A funeral service will be held in the chapel of the First Baptist Church in Midland on Tuesday, February 23rd at 11 o'clock. She will be laid to rest at Forest Park in Shreveport, Louisiana on Saturday, February 27th at 11 o'clock. Olga Le Guin Gwen Sawyer of Stanton passed away Sunday, February 14th. A visitation will be held at Gilbreth Funeral Home on Monday, February 22nd from 1 p.m. until 2:30. Graveside service will be held at 3 o'clock Monday, February 22nd at Evergreen Cemetery. Porter Farrell II, a resident of Fort Worth, died in the early morning of February 10th. A graveside service will be conducted at 11 a.m. on Monday, February 22nd at Fairview Cemetery in Midland. A private memorial service will be held at a later date in Fort Worth. Ray Unterbrink, 84, died February 17th after a brief illness. Arrangements are made with Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net. Frank Douglas Norwood, Jr. of Midland passed away on Tuesday, February 9th. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin West Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Jerley Elias Ellis, 91 of Midland, passed away Saturday, February 13th in Midland. Graveside services will be Tuesday, February 23rd at 1 p.m. at Rest Haven North. Janet Eileen Renault Stuteville, 65 of Odessa, passed away on February 12th. There are no services planned at this time. Juanita Hargrove, 87 of Odessa, passed from this life on February 10th in Odessa. A celebration of life was held February 19th at American Heritage Funeral Home. Manuela Ibarra, 70, of Midland, passed away February 15th. Rosary will be held at 7 p.m. Tuesday, February 23rd at Nally Pickham West Funeral Chapel. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Wednesday at St. Stephen's Catholic Church.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, February 20th, 2021, Section A. Lottery Set for Odessa Idea Campuses by Ruth Campbell. The lottery for Idea Public Schools Yukon is set for February 27th. Bethany Solis, Executive Director of IDEA Permian Basin, said it is a blind lottery where everyone's names are put in and randomly selected. She said they have had 748 applications for 480 seats at the elementary and secondary levels. We extend offers to the first 480. Everyone else is pulled out of the lottery and placed in the order that they're selected on a waiting list, Solis said. Founded in 2000, IDEA Public Schools has grown from a small school with 150 students to the fastest growing network of tuition-free pre-kindergarten through 12th grade public charter schools in the country, its website said. A full school site, or a campus, has two schools. An elementary, which we often refer to as an academy, is K through 5. In some schools, we also have pre-K, and then secondary is middle school and high school. We call that our preparatory school, and that's 6th through 12th, Solis said in a previous interview. Craig Gutierrez, currently principal of IDEA Travis in Midland, will be principal of the College Prep campus when it opens in August of this year. IDEA is planning to hire an elementary principal by the end of the month, Solis said. Gutierrez said they will start with kindergarten, first and second grade, and have 360 students. They will add a grade a year. The College Preparatory campus will start with sixth grade and also add a grade a year. Gutierrez said they will start with 120 students. Solis said parents will find out within a week after the lottery whether their child got in. For middle school and high school, I will have three core teachers, and they have been hired, and also a special education teacher, like a life skills teacher, and a special education co-teacher, Gutierrez said. Aaron Fong, Vice President of Schools for IDEA, said the academy is in need of 10 SCORE teachers. He had about half of those positions filled. Solis said the building, which will separate the schools into wings, is on schedule. It is located at 7300 East Yukon Road. IDEA is looking at August 9th as the most likely starting date. We're waiting for local districts to finalize their calendars because we never have the exact same calendar, but we do try to align to some extent, Solis said. IDEA has one governing board for all its schools in Texas and local advisory boards to keep the governing board connected to each community. The advisory boards are not required to meet in public, but the statewide board is, she said. The advisory board has five members. Members from Odessa are banker Chris Cole, Adrian Vega of the Sewell Family of Companies and the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin, and Brenda Denton of the Wood Family Foundation. Becca Myers from Educate Midland is also on the panel. Colin Sewell, president of the Sewell Family of Companies, is on IDEA's state-level governing board. Gutierrez said although he works at IDEA Travis currently, he has lived in Odessa since August. It's a principal-in-residence program, so I can spend an entire year learning the IDEA systems and lots of other ways of how IDEA does things, so I will have a successful launch at UConn in August. He has 15 years of experience as a teacher and administrator. He added that IDEA is very goal and mission driven for the betterment of all students on the academic side, but also the whole child. Asked about extracurricular activities and sports, officials said they will be offered starting in sixth grade. They are going to start off as clubs, but once they have seventh grade, they will be considering whether to participate in the UIL or the Texas Charter School Academic and Athletic League, Gutierrez said. Solis said fine arts will eventually be offered. When you start really small with just sixth grade, the number of electives we can offer is pretty minimal, she said. But once we scale out and go up to 12th grade, we're able to offer many more electives. We actually give principals a fair amount of choice in what electives they prioritize, and we have many campuses that offer a variety of arts classes. Some campuses will choose to prioritize more like STEM electives. Others might offer orchestra and band. It will really depend on what the kids are most passionate about. Last year, Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray said that for the class of 2013, 6.5% of district students successfully completed a 2 or 4 year degree after 6 years. Solis noted that IDEA's college completion rate hovers around 50%. She added that this was a call to action as a community. I think one of the things we're most excited about is that we'd hoped to be a part of the solution in changing that. Our focus is preparing every student who walks through our doors for college so that when parents enroll their students at IDEA, no matter what their past academic experience has been, no matter what neighborhood they grew up in, they can rest assured that if they choose IDEA, everyone's on that same path to college, Solis said. She said IDEA tracks college acceptance, which every year they've had 100% college acceptance. This is the 15th year. College matriculation, which has been 100% every year except one. They had a student 1 year who did not enroll. And college completion rate within 6 years, which is about 50%. Solis said one of the things IDEA does is set the bar high from the beginning so students and families know this is what they are shooting for. We have high expectations and we provide high support. The majority of our students come in below grade level. We also have students come in above grade level, accelerated students, but the majority generally come in below grade level. And we have very specific intervention programs that help catch them up quickly. In high school, advanced placement classes are open to everyone. Every student completes approximately 11 AP courses by the end of high school so that they're having college-level rigor. About 90% of our students pass at least one AP exam by the end of high school, which is really exciting, Solis said. They also have what's called a road to and through college course that aims to prepare students for different aspects of higher education, such as note-taking, study skills, and organization, she added. And as they get higher in grades, we teach them about financial aid, financial planning. We help teach them on completing the application process, completing their FAFSA, free application for federal student aid. We provide parents with a lot of support, especially around the financial aid piece. Once they've been accepted to college and matriculate, we have a college success team which has a number of alumni managers whose sole job is to coach and support a portfolio of our alumni while they're in college to help them see it through to completion, she said. Starting in sixth grade, Solis said they take students on a multi-day college field trip to visit lots of colleges and get a feel for being away from home. This also gives parents practice with their children being away from home, she added. COVID-19 hasn't even put a damper on the college acceptance rate and college-going culture. We have had stronger college readiness data this year than we've ever had. Just yesterday, we achieved for the very first time in our organization's history a 50% acceptance rate to Tier 1 and Tier 2 colleges. What that means is many years ago, we set goals around the percentage of our seniors who would be accepted to selective colleges. That's because the data shows that students, especially low-income students, are more likely to stay in college when they go to more selective schools. We have really tried to do a better job of helping more and more of our students get into more selective colleges so that they stay and finish. We've never hit the 50% until yesterday. Big Thaw, Finally Here by Michael Bauer. Residents in Odessa and Midland experienced something that has been rare in the last 7 to 8 days, which was above freezing temperatures. On Friday, the temperatures rose to as high as 43 degrees and a low of 23, but probably the biggest part for some was the clear skies. As people start to recover from this week's winter storm, warming temperatures this weekend will help accelerate the melting of snow that has made traveling hazardous for motorists. What we can expect for the next few days is a gradual warm-up, meteorologist Devin Tichak of the National Weather Service in Midland said. It will kind of warm up a little unevenly at first due to where our recent snowfalls were from Carlsbad through Monahans to the Big Lake area, where they had more snowfall. Monahans and Big Lake will see a slower warming up, according to Tichak, because of the heavier amount of snow that they received compared to the rest of the Permian Basin. The forecast for at least the next 5 to 6 days calls for clear skies. Saturday's high is expected to be 55 degrees with a low of 34. Sunday's high is expected to be 55 as well, with 25 as the low. Monday should also see a high in the 50s, while Tuesday's is expected to get into the 60s for the first time in weeks. By early next week, we should be talking temperatures near the 70s and even in the 70s, Tichak said. For the next couple of days, there's not much in the way of weather. There's a warming trend going on throughout the weekend. Thursday's snowfall was the last hurdle for those in the Permian Basin before the system finally made its way out of the area and state. With the measurements in, the snowfall around the Permian Basin has varied, but Odessa and Midland only got a trace, according to Tichak. We had some flurries, he said. Odessa might have had some more, like a light dusting on the western or south side of town where they were on the edge of that snow bend. But for the most part, the Midland-Odessa area did not receive much snowfall. Areas such as Reagan County and Upton County saw an even bigger amount of snowfall from Thursday. The Big Lake area reported 8 to 10 inches of snow, and then McCamey had about 7.5 inches. The areas south of Midland and Odessa and the lower Trans-Pecos area got the brunt of the snowfall Thursday. Warming shelters. According to a press release, the remaining warming shelters in the city of Odessa will be deactivated by the end of tomorrow. Odessa had 3 city-commissioned warming shelters, which included St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, the Copper Rose Building, and the Salvation Army. The St. Elizabeth Ann Seton shelter is now deactivated, and the Copper Rose Building and Salvation Army will operate until noon Saturday. Road conditions. The temperatures may be warming up, but travel conditions are still far from normal as the snow continues to melt away. Gene Powell, Odessa's TxDOT District Public Information Officer, is still urging motorists to be as careful as possible as the conditions in the Permian Basin vary in different parts. Most everything has melted off yet and may not melt off Friday, Powell said. Our district is so huge that going from Pecos to Sheffield and Andrews and Stanton, that things are different all over. I have temperatures down near Sanderson. It's different all over. I have temperatures down near Sanderson in Terrell County, which is in my district. We have US 90 closed from Sanderson going east, where something out at the I-10 split is completely different. While the conditions were fairly clear Friday, Powell added that anything left on the roads will freeze at night and that people should still be cautious. There's always a chance for ice and people are always going to need to slow down. The speed limit on I-20 is 65 and people exceed that every day. They certainly shouldn't be exceeding it with this weather. It's so important that people drive slowly in these conditions and not take chances. We'll have a nice afternoon of temperatures rising, but anything that's on the road tonight when it drops back under freezing will refreeze. Things can be really slick again. It needs to be repeated because people get complacent and don't remember that water is going to refreeze overnight. Market Street. Grocery stores all across the state have been feeling the impact from this week's winter storm as customers search the shelves to restock on supplies, and that has been the case for local stores, including Market Street on 42nd Street. The store is owned by the United Supermarket family based out of Lubbock. According to assistant grocer Orlando Avila, the store has been slowly getting back to normal. "We're trying to get back into it," Avila said. "We had a 3,000-piece truck come in the other day, so we did quite a bit on the shelves. We're looking a lot better than we have been." There have been a number of reasons for grocers to struggle to return supplies to the shelves, but Avila says they've been fortunate with United, based in Lubbock. "We're blessed that our store comes out of Lubbock," he said. "It's not coming out of San Antonio like Walmart or HEB. It's only 2 hours away." According to Avila, water, milk, and eggs have been the biggest items in demand. The store also managed to have power for the week. "We're glad that we didn't lose any power. We would have lost a lot of money at that point," Avila said. OPD chief provides shooting details. Officers placed on standard leave as Rangers investigate, by Royal McGregor. Odessa Police Department Chief Michael Gerke, Friday afternoon, provided details of Thursday's officer-involved shooting that sent one man to the hospital. Gerke identified the man shot by law enforcement as 39-year-old Odessan Christopher Okon. The OPD chief said during the press conference that Okong was shot once after he was reportedly involved in an auto theft. Gerke said two OPD officers and one Texas Department of Public Safety deputy fired shots after they saw Okong pointing an unknown object at them. "That object at this point is not identified," Gerke said when he was asked about the object. Okong pointed at law enforcement. The reported officer-involved shooting happened around 10:20 p.m. Thursday in the 300 block of Ellis Drive, an OPD press release stated. Officers reportedly responded to the listed address. Gerke said officers made contact with Okon, and he pointed an unknown object at law enforcement that they immediately perceived as a firearm. Okon was shot once and transported to Medical Center Hospital. Gerke said Okon was in stable condition as of Friday afternoon. Gerke also said that Okon is currently being charged with theft, a third-degree felony. As the investigation progresses, further charges may result. The two officers and deputy involved weren't injured. Gerke said the two officers were placed on administrative leave, as is department policy, during an officer-involved shooting investigation. Gerke didn't identify the two OPD officers who were on administrative leave. He also said he didn't know how many officer-involved shootings OPD has been involved in during the last year. This investigation was turned over to the Texas Rangers, which is standard protocol. "We really do step back from it," Gerke said. "We let the Texas Rangers run the investigation." Local News Roundup. United Family celebrates first Employee Appreciation Day. Monday, the United Family will be celebrating its first ever Employee Appreciation Day for team members across Texas and New Mexico. According to a press release Friday, the Lubbock-based chain said that United Family team members demonstrated heroic efforts to keep communities going and found the time to give back, donating thousands of hours of volunteer time and millions of dollars in charitable donations. Community members can go to https://www.theunitedfamily.com/thankyou/ to give a shout out to their favorite team members. People can also honor supermarket frontline workers on social media using the hashtag supermarket heroes and tag their store. Lawn mowing and roof repairing assistance. The City of Odessa Community Development Department is offering lawn mowing and roof repairing assistance for residents who meet income and age guidelines. To qualify for lawn mowing assistance, a person must reside within Odessa city limits. Everyone in the household must be at least 65 years old or disabled and be the homeowner, according to a city press release. Residents must also have a total household income that does not exceed HUD low income limits. HUD low income limits range from $39,400 for a household of one to a combined total income of $74,250 for a household of eight. To qualify for the city's roof repair program, an applicant must reside within the city of Odessa, own the home in which they reside, and must be clear of any liens. Property taxes must have a balance of $150 or less. To qualify, a total household income cannot exceed HUD low income limits. For more information, contact the city's Community Development Department at 432-335-4820. Obituary and death notices for Saturday, February 20th. Kayla Breanne Wagoner Everett. Midland. Kayla Breanne Wagoner Everett was born August 7th, 1982 in Lubbock and passed away February 16th in Midland. She married Richard Sean Everett in 2008 on the island of Maui. Kayla is survived by her husband, Sean Everett, her children, Ella and Quinn, her parents, Danny and Tina Wagoner of Midland, and Hansel and Jenny Everett of Sandersville, Georgia. Her sister, Megan Pasco, and husband, Josh. Brothers-in-law, Ryan Everett of Los Angeles, and Casey Everett and wife, Lacey, of Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. Grandparents, Gladys Day of Canyon, Charles and Shirley Wagoner of Muleshoe, and Maria Everett of Cooper's Cove. She is also survived by many aunts, uncles, cousins, and nephews and nieces. Kayla is preceded in death by grandparents Herbert Day, Kenneth and Hilda Lewis, and Hansel Everett. Visitation was held Friday, February 19th at the branch of Nally Pickle and Welch in Midland. A celebration of life was held Saturday, February 20th at Renew Life Church, and graveside services and burial will be in Wharton, Georgia. Please send donations to Sylvia Willis in support of her cancer treatment and journey. Sylvia Willis, 323 Tanglewood, Midland, 79703, cash.app, or to Mason Brunetta https://www.gofundme.com/f/mason-brunetta-medical-expenses?UTM_source=Facebook and FBCLID equal LWARTVMUH3RVOX3GP-F93MV4QHZG3T4MJ_LX-L85R6BKUX874Y4GVX-MSHLCKONA. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices. James W. McGeehee. James W. McGeehee, 84, of Breckenridge, died Friday, February 12th in Abilene. A celebration of life was held February 20th at Cottonwood Cemetery. Burial followed immediately. Arrangements by Morrison Funeral Home of Graham. Roger Ador Nyborg. Roger Ador Nyborg, 79, of Odessa, died Sunday, February 14th. A celebration of life was held February 20th at American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. James Walter Owen Jr. James Walter Owen Jr., 76, died Wednesday, February 17th in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Janet Aline Renault Stuteville. Janet Aline Renault Stuteville, 65, died Friday, February 12th in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.